Good morning, everybody.
Hopefully between now and Tisha B'Av, I hope uninterrupted, we're going to learn selections from Pirkei Avot. Every few years I decide it's time to go back to Pirkei Avot. So, there are a lot of introductions and all sorts of things I want to say, but I usually like to save them after we have gotten into the topic itself. So, my selections, at some point in time, you will realize why I chose to select what I chose to select, and it doesn't really make any difference. Every Mishnah is great in Pirkei Avot, so what difference does it make which one we're going to learn? But the fact is, what I did want to choose as a unit, there are four Mishnayot in the third chapter of Pirkei Avot, which are the Mishnayot of Rabbi Akiva. Each and every one of them is a gem, an absolute gem. But I couldn't just start with Rabbi Akiva without learning the Mishnah of Rabbi Yishmael that comes before it. Rabbi Yishmael and Rabbi Akiva lived at the same time. We're talking about the period of the destruction of the Second Temple and the years afterwards. Remember, Rabbi Akiva is going to be the one who will lead the Bar Kokhba rebellion against Rome that unfortunately is going to end in tragedy and defeat in the year 135. The Churban HaBayit, the destruction of the Second Beit HaMikdash, was in the year 70. And we're talking about Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Yishmael. They are all living at this time already, and both Rabbi Yishmael and Rabbi Akiva are of the 10 martyrs who were put to death by Rome. It was an extremely, extremely turbulent period in Jewish history. I would say turbulent is not a good enough word. Right now we're in a turbulent time. This was tragic, terrifying, a period of savage brutality against the Jewish people. And I like getting right into things. Rabbi Yishmael Omer. Rabbi Yishmael says, I suggest first you start with the English, and then I'm going to take you to the Hebrew text, because I feel that I want to acquaint you with what the Mishnah looks like. There's another sheet. There's another sheet. Rabbi Yishmael Omer, Hadi Kal Rosh, the Noach of Tishchodet, the Rabbi Kabel of Koha Adam the Simcha. Simple, short, sweet, to the point, but there are so many levels of meaning here, it's unbelievable. Unbelievable. We'll take the simple translation. Have a cow be. Cow really means light, easy, swift. Our English here says yielding, l'rosh, to somebody who is a superior, somebody that's greater than you. Brother, we meet up in life with three kinds of people. Those who we clearly recognize stand above us, be it intellectually, it may very well be just in point of their position, power. There are people above us, there are people that we see as below us, and then there are those that we see as equal with us. So Rabbi Yishmael says, with regard to Rosh, somebody who is greater than us, then we have to be light and swift and yielding to do their bidding. We have to understand that what they wish and what they do and what they have to say is meaningful to us, and we should be pliable in our relationship with them. V'noach l'tishchoret. Noach, easygoing, tishchoret with the young. You don't look down upon people who you see as being below your station in life. You should be pleasant to them. You should be nice to them. You should receive every person cheerfully. Receive every person cheerfully. By the way, this is a far more powerful statement than the famous one made in the first chapter of Pirkei Avot by Shammai. Hevei lekabel et kol ha'adam, to receive every person, to save their panim yachot, with a fine countenance. Rabbi Yishmael is saying a great deal more. You should relate to people with joy, with happiness. Yeah, you have to feel a sense of happiness that you are with another human being. Alright, seems like a very simple, straightforward Mishnah. So you have to know that there are so many other levels over here that are at work. First of all, let's know a little bit about the because I believe that we're going to learn, you have to know about the person who's saying it. And not only do you have to know something about the person who's saying it, you also have to know something about the period of time in which he lived. Rabbi Yishmael was Rabbi Yishmael ben Elisha, who was a Kohen. His Zayde, Rabbi Yishmael ben Elisha, had been a Kohen Gadol in the period of the Second Temple. He is the Rabbi Yishmael. There are many debates in Talmud between Rabbi Yishmael and Rabbi Akiva. This is the famous Rabbi Yishmael. And as we said, he is also going to be one of the 10 martyrs who are going to be put to death by Rome. He lived in the south of Eretz Yisrael. There he had his base medrash. And amongst his students were some of the great Tanoim, Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Yonatan, Rabbi Yoshia, Rabbi Loa. In his youth, he had been taken captive to Rome. And the Gemara tells a very fascinating story about Rabbi Yishmael as a child. As a child, there he is, he was incarcerated in Rome. The Gemara says the following, that Rabbi Yehoshua ben Hanania came to Rome, and they told him that there's a child here, a child that is in prison, a child with yafei na'im, with beautiful eyes, the tov roi, and very good looking, ukutzotav tal talim sudrot lo, and beautiful hair. So Rabbi Yehoshua ben Hanania went and he walked by this prison, and he stood at the entrance to the prison, and he said a pasuk in Yeshayahu, Mi natan l'mishisa Yaakov v'Yisrael l'bozazim, who has given Yaakov into the hand of those that have robbed him, and who has committed Israel to be trampled by its enemies? And he hears a voice coming out of the prison, the second half of this pasuk, Halo Hashem zu chaton, lo, God permitted it because we sinned to him. V'lo avu b'drachav haloch, we did not want to go in his ways. V'lo shomu b'torato, they didn't listen to his Torah. So here it is, Rabbi Yishua ben Hanania says, first half of the pasuk, I mean, it's sort of, you know, it turns out to be some kind of a code. The response is something that tells him, yes, this child is there, and this child has great abilities. He said, I promise, he called in, if I have to pay all the money in the world, I'm going to redeem you, which in fact he did. And he said that this child is going to be a great leader in the Jewish people, and in years to come, that's exactly what happened. There's a... I was afraid somebody would ask me that. So there is a Tosfos in the Sechtek Suvas that talks about it. I'm going to have to look at it again and report to you next week. But yes, because there's a Tosfos in Suvas, they bring somebody there by the name of Avshalom, and Tosfos says, why is there somebody by the name of Avshalom? Over here, it may very well be that his name was Yishmael because of the same reason that, you know, God heard somebody's prayers over here. Remember also, you have to understand before I say all the rest of the things that I want to say, I'll check my sources before I get into any trouble over here. Okay. Good question. There's a very famous Mishnah about Rabbi Yishmael. The Mishnah says the following: there was a person who made a vow not to to have anything to do with his niece. There was something to the idea of an uncle marrying a niece. She wasn't good looking. So he made a vow, doesn't want to have anything to do with her. When Yishmael got wind of this, this is the Mishnah. Mishnah says, he brought her into our house and they did a job on her. Clothed her, groomed her, and she's a stunningly beautiful woman. He calls this uncle and he says, is this the one about whom you had vowed not to have anything to do with her? He says, no, not at all. So Rabbi Yishmael released him from his vow, and he was therefore able to marry her. The Mishnah says that Rabbi Yishmael said, Benos Yisrael, the daughters of Israel, are beautiful, except that poverty and suffering is that which causes them not to let their great beauty come out. Mishnah goes on to say that when Rabbi Yishmael died, Benos Yisrael went out to the Levi and they said, Benot Yisrael al Rabbi Yishmael b'chena. Daughters of Israel cry for Rabbi Yishmael. Rabbi Yishmael brought out the inner beauty of Benot Yisrael. His life was also tragic. He lost two children during the course of his lifetime, but he became one of the giants of the Masorah in that generation, following the destruction of the second Beth Hamikdash, and until somewhere around the time that the rebellion against Rome was crushed. All right, so now back to the Mishnah, Havikal L'Rosh. So it's very fascinating that the Rosh and Tishchoret, these are the two opposite words, and there are all sorts of meanings to the two of them. Kal L'Rosh obviously means somebody who is greater than you. If we're talking about two people, watch. It could be talking about this. There's the one who stands higher than you, and then there's Tishchoret. Tishchoret is the young, because, you know, hair is not yet white. Still black. I was never black. It's okay. Not gray, not white. So that's Tishchoret. So be kal l'rosh. Easy to deal with. Light-footed to serve those who are greater than you, and then noach letish choret. You have to be nice to those who are younger than you. Never look down on anybody. Never look down, and receive everybody with great joy. There's another way to look at it. That it's talking about the human being himself. We go through two periods in our lives. One period in life is the period of Rosh. Rosh is the beginning of life. Tishchoret, sort of the days as the days darken and life is on the second half the second half. So even one and the same person, if one is easy to serve God when he is young, it's going to be much easier to do it when one grows older. There's even a very fascinating pshat that is said, Hezekiel Lerosh, that the word Lerosh, listen to what the letters of the word Lerosh stand for. La'asot, Ritzon, Avicha, Sheva Shemayim. Lerosh means that you should be full of energy to do the will of your Father in heaven. La'asot, Ritzon, Avicha, Sheva Shemayim. There are Mepharshim that learn that this is all talking about how one is supposed to relate to government. How one is supposed to relate to government. And Rosh and Tishoret have different meanings. Rosh means one who is in a position of leadership. He may very well be talking about Roman leadership. That you have to know how to appease them, how to deal with them. Tishchoret, the word of all the fascinating things is, Tishchoret also means a takid, a lower level of officer. You have to go easy with them. You can't get into difficult situations with pekidim. We know exactly what happens when you try to get. You have to go easy with them. They have this feeling that they can lord it over everybody, and if they can give you a hard time, they're ready to give you a hard time. It's part of the mental and emotional makeup of a pakid. Like he holds, whether it's your driver's license or who knows what, in his hands. And this, in a sense, is the ability that they hold over. You see, you have to know how to deal with people who are in government. We're going to look soon into this text, but I tell you, I'm walking around, and you know, it seems like what would you call it? A sweet, nice Mishnah. Isn't it a nice, pleasant Mishnah? Nobody wants to. I'll ask that a question. Isn't Rabbi Yishmael saying nice things, you know? Okay? You know what he's doing? Struck me. I'm walking in the street and it struck me. Rabbi Yishmael is a revolutionary! Rabbi Yishmael is a revolutionary! During the period of the Roman Empire, people were objects. Anybody not in leadership was a slave. Everybody was looked down upon. People didn't have rights. Along comes Rabbi Yishmael and says, Havei mekabel es kol ha'adam besimcha. Receive every human being with joy. With joy. Do you understand what he's saying? Every human being has great value. Every human being means something. There are over 10 million references on Google to slavery during the course of the Roman Empire. And do you know when slavery began to pass from the Roman Empire? In about the 4th or 5th century, when the Roman Empire became Christian. So then they became anti-Semites. That's a mandar tzuva. But be nice to people. Wait a minute. I have A friend sends me books. I got one in the mail yesterday, 2 days ago, and here I'm reading. It's unbelievable. It's something that you have to know. I'm reading it, and I'm thinking of the Rebbe Yishmael. Rebbe Yishmael is talking at the time of the Roman Empire. What about today? What's the situation of the world today? So the name of this book is Islam and Dehimitude. You know what a Dehimi is? Well, it's about time. First of all, everybody here in this room is a Dehimi. And if anybody, and if you think I'm complimenting you, I'm not complimenting you. A Dehimi is the pshat, an infidel. A Jew or a Christian to a Muslim, a Jew or a Christian is a Dehimi. There are hilchos Dehimi. There are laws already. There are halachos of Dehimi for 1300 years. You're not supposed to look at a Dehimi. You're not supposed to greet a Dehimi. If they say hello to you, all right. Let me read a halacha. I read it last night. I didn't know what's in it. One should not. This is an official 10th century Tzak halacha. One should not be the first to say shalom, to Jews or Christians. But one, when one has inadvertently said salam to a tributary, somebody who is below you, he should not be asked to consider it null and void. If a Jew or Christian, listen, if a Jew or Christian greets you, you must reply, Aleika. Aleika means Eilecha. Same to you. That's the most that you can say. No more than that. If you greeted one whom you considered a Muslim only to learn he was a Dehimi, withdraw your word, pretending. You didn't really say hello to him. If one of them salutes, he is answered with saying to you. Look, I can go on now for hours reading about the relationship the Muslim religiously looks down upon everybody else in the world as below him. Can you imagine today? Hazeh mikabel et kol adam besimcha, receive every human being with joy. It's not true. It's not so in the world today, in the 21st century. There are all sorts of stories that they bring over here, historical records of Jews and Christians who were abused wherever they went by Muslims. Anybody who tells you, sometimes you hear around here that, oh, before the Zionists came, it was Shulam Yishalva. Oh, you must have do Galatas and give Matach Galatachazach as you took over here. Oh, God, the descriptions of the terrible pogroms that took place over here. It was a matter of Jews were degraded throughout all of history by Muslims. It's a basic tenet of their belief. It's not possible for a Muslim to ever have thought, Hevei mikabelet kol ha'adam b'simcha. Rabbi Yishmael is saying something that is so revolutionary, so different, so powerful. He's most probably not understood. But we learn it. And we think, isn't Rabbi Yishmael a nice, sweet man? No, Rabbi Yishmael is not a nice, sweet man. Rabbi Yishmael is standing up against Rome and everything that Rome stands for. He rejects everything by which Rome lives. That's how Rabbi Yishmael has to be read. You can read this Mishnah, sweet Mishnah, your whole life, and not realize that the man is making a powerful statement of the infinite worth of a human being. And you're going to see how Rabbi Akiva is going to pick this up from his Mishnah that's going to come soon. Chaviv Adam Shenivra B'Tzelem, beloved is man who's created in the image of God. That's a whole different way. By the way. Yeah, go ahead.
When we have rules like love your neighbor, like yourself type of thing, does it not apply to your Jewish neighbor? Does this apply to your Jewish fellow man?
It's very good that you're asking that question, because that question is going to be dealt with. I don't know whether it will be dealt with in this year, but it's going to be in a text over here, and you're going to see a completely different approach, the approach of Torah, as to, I may not have to love all human beings, but remember, Rabbi Akiva is going to say, Chaviv Adam, beloved is man, all men. Shenivra B'Tzelem, we're going to be created in the image of God. Rabbi Akiva also is going to make absolutely revolutionary statements. You know what our problem is? Our problem is, we're too good. We're too sweet. You understand? We've been raised since childhood on Pirkei Avos, and we think, I'm okay, you're okay, the whole world is okay. The whole world isn't okay. The whole world does not see things the way we do it. The words of Pirkei Avos are not just sweet, nice aphorisms. These are, I'm going to say, you know what Rabbi Yishmael is doing? Rabbi Yishmael is making a powerful political statement that the way in which the world, the Roman Empire, is being conducted, and the way men look down upon fellow men, how they enslave them, this is intolerable. That's why I just wanted you to get the idea, and we're going to bring this idea home in a number of ways, that in Pirkei Avos there are extremely, extremely strong, powerful statements that are made, and they're not just, you know, saccharine sweet kind of, you know, love everybody. The more people talk about love, the less love there is. The less love there is, you understand? You know, love, love, love. Well, what is it? They're going to bring love to the streets of Yerushalayim, so the Eibush Derabim, Eibush Derabim. There's an excellent article by Yaffa Gans this morning in the Jerusalem Post, right next to a horrible article by a Rabbi Kelman. So I went to the trouble of calling Yaffa Gans this morning. She wasn't in, but I left a message giving her a Yashikai, Hashem Rishamayim, with the battles that we have to fight over here. All right. Let's, our Hebrew. Here. Now you have to have the right side. You have to have the right side. The side that says, Yud Beit Rabbi Yishmael, and you know, I'm going to take these back from you because it'll take us a few weeks until we get through it. Rabbi Yishmael, you see where it says Rabbi Yishmael? I want you to learn what the Mishnayos, what a Mishnayos looks like. You got it? There are three main Mefarshim over here on the Mishnah. Up here you have the Chesh Ayin is Rebbe Ovadya mi Bar Tanura. Bar Tanura isn't a Kedem wine. Bar Tanura was a little town in northern Italy. Rebbe Ovadya mi Bar Tanura, we're talking about 400 years ago. We will yet give a full history of Rebbe Ovadya mi Bar Tanura. Here in Eretz Yisrael, Yerushalayim, they know about Rabbi Ovadya mi Bar Tanura. I don't know if you noticed the wall signs in Yerushalayim. One of the things you have to learn is which signs to read, which signs not to read, which ones to take seriously, and which ones not to take seriously. But it seems Gimel Siv on the third day of Siv and before Shavuos is the Yahrzeit of Rabbi Ovadya mi Bar Tanura, who is buried on Har HaZeis, and they had all sorts of ceremonies related to him. He was one of the first, we're talking following the great Mefarshim of the Mishnah, of course Rashi, there's Rashi on the Mishnah, and of course there's the Rambam. The Rambam wrote a commentary on all of Mishnah, all six Sidrei Mishnah, and the Rambam started his commentary on the Mishnah when he was 23 years old and finished it when he was 28. It then, in and of itself, would have already given him eternity by the Jewish people, but then he went on to write the Mishnah Torah and the Mara Nevuch, and God, what else? Unbelievable. Here in the Mishnayos, you have Rabbi Ovadia Mibar Tanura, who lived many years in Italy. From Bar Tanura they moved to Toronto. You think Toronto's in Canada? There's a Toronto in northern Italy. And then ultimately he came on Aliyah, but we'll give you a whole history of, I don't want to go into the history of it now. Then there's the Tosfos Yontif, Rav Yontif Lipman Heller. This is already about 200 years ago, 150 years ago. And down at the bottom is the Teferet Yisroel, Rabbi Yisroel Lipschitz, a major contribution. I'm going to show you sections from each one of them so you'll get a feeling of what the Mishnah is. This is serious stuff. Pirkei Avos is very serious stuff. And you know what? It'd be nice if you can review it to know the Mishnah of Alper, Rabbi Yishmael Omer, Rabbi Kaul LaRosh, the Noach Letish Choreth, the Havei Mekabel, the Kol Ha'adam, the Simcha. Let's take a look at the, I'm going to read through the Rav. We're going to try it. Listen, don't be afraid. Yudbet, Mishnah Yudbet, third chapter, Havei Kaul LaRosh, Lishnei Odom Godol, Rosh is an Odom Godol, a great man, Zokin, an elder, the Yoshev B'Rosh B'Yeshiva, who is the head of the Yeshiva. Heavy cow la avoda vadotov. It should be with ease that you do his work. Ul shamesh lufanav, and to serve him. The Noach, l'tishchoret. And you should be easy. L'tishchoret, l'odem bachur, a person who's young. Shesarotav v'shechorot, that his hair is black. Ein chotzorich l'hok elas b'chor. You don't have to, in a sense, be light-footed and quick. You relate to him with ease and with confidence. In your relationship with every human being, bein rosh, bein tishchoret, big, small, tamal besimcha. That's a tremendous thing to ask of a person, that you should be full of joy from a fellow human being. Mekabel. Interesting. Mekabel, receive. Now, by receive, he wants to make something very clear. Hevei mekabel. Mekabel. Receive could mean receive into my house. That's not what it means. I don't have to receive everybody into my house. By receive, what he really means is, if you meet him and you stand with him. You see, because the word mekabel has a number of meanings in Talmud. There is a halacha, chayiv odam, a person is obligated lekabel pnei rabo baregel, to receive the face of his Rebbe on Yom Tov. There was a minig to go visit your Rebbe on Yom Tov. That means coming in to your Rebbe. They have it over here. You understand the chief rabbis and the president on Yom Tov, in the sukkah, in the pain, in the hair. But mekabel over here does not mean that I have to receive everybody into my house. You know, my house is my castle. I like to think it's my castle. But we're talking just about you meet a human being. There has to be a sense of joy. Mekabel kibo magbil mitargum nege kabel. Standing opposite him. Perishacha. Now he says the second pshat. The first pshat was Rosh is one person, great person. Tishchoret is a person below my station in life. And then he says, this is the second shot, Perush Acher, another shot. Has a cow l'rosh, b'reishit ha'rosh means v'reishit at the beginning of your life, the first part of your life. Kishata bachur, when you're young, you should get into the habit of serving God. Has a cow l'asot its own borecha, it should be easy for you to do the will of your Creator. U'b'ziknu secha, then, in your old age, when the face darkens, because of age, it's going to be easy for you to serve God. The more effort that you put into serving God in your youth, the easier it's going to be to serve Him as you grow up. Yes, we don't grow older, we're just growing up all the time, and we still have a lot of growing up to do. The Tiferet Yisrael, I'll just tell you what he says. He explains it as well, that Rosh, Tishchoret, and the Kabbalah, Kol Ha'adam, the Simcha, three different people. The one above me, the one below me, the one equal to me. So he says, If I am swift to do the service of the one who is above me, he will look at me like a son. If I am easy and even tempered with the one below my station in life, he will look at me as a father. And if I am able to receive every person with joy, then we will look at each other like brothers. Those are basically the three different relationships that exist between a human being and those around him. One is either a son or a father or a brother. All right, that's Rebbe Yishmael. Over here. Okay. Rebbe Akiva Omer. Now we're up to Mishnah. Here will be four Mishnayot that deal with Rabbi Akiva. At least the beginnings of the story of Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva's history, his biographies were probably one of the most fascinating biographies of all. We had talked about it in a different context some weeks ago. Rabbi Akiva was totally unlearned in his youth. Unlearned. He was a shepherd, an ignorant shepherd. In the for the flocks of a one of the wealthiest men of Yerushalayim, Kalva Savua, one of the great, powerful and mighty men of Yerushalayim. And none of you know. What do you want, Yiddish Anachas, to hear Kalba Sabua has a daughter by the name of Rachel, and she falls in love with Rabbi Akiva, and she secretly marries him when her father finds out that she has married this Akiva, who is one of his shepherds. Most probably he had thought that, you know, for his daughter Rachel, can you marry Kalba Sabua? It is going to get a shidduch, you understand. A prince, a Kohen Gadol, who knows what he's going to get. The Zan Ruchala. And his Ruchala goes and he thinks she's thrown her life out with this fellow Akiva who's a nothing. And so he disowns her from everything. She's left penniless. But she marries Rabbi Akiva, sorry. She marries Akiva on condition that he agrees to go study Torah, which he does. And then, of course, the Gemara goes on to tell us the story that 12 years later he came back with 12,000 students. She says that if he would listen to me, he'd go back and learn for another 12 years, which he did, and came back with 24,000 students. There are a lot of stories in the Gemara about all the difficulties that Rabbi Akiva had until he was able to learn, and one day the Gemara uses the mashal that he saw a rock that had been etched away by water dripping on it, you know, and sort of cut away. So he said that if water that is so soft is able to cut away at a rock, then into my head I can also bring Torah. The greatness of Rabbi Akiva most probably is that just about all of Torah Shabbat that we have today is Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva is the giant of Torah Shabbat Peh. The Gemara says it. The Gemara says the following, that the Tosefta, all of the great works of the Tanoim were all by Rabbi Akiva and his students. But we're going to give a fuller biography of Rabbi Akiva. One of the most unusual and exceptional parts of his biography, and this is also going to require a great deal of discussion. He presided, in addition to the fact that he presided over the, really the, not the birth, but the development, the powerful development of Torah Shabbat Peh up until today. Mishnah, Talmud, this is in great measure the work of Rabbi Akiva, by the way, whose father was a convert. His father was a convert. Mi b'nei bonav shel Sisra, from the Enek Lecha Sisra. Sisra is the one who Dvor and Barak ben Avinoam went out to wage war against him. Sisra is the one who is killed by Ya'el. I mean, can you imagine? Sisra most probably wouldn't have minded being killed if he would find out, if he would have known that one of his Einikloch, you understand, that this is Goyishin Achris, you know, that one of his Einikloch is going to be the great, one of the great fathers and patrons of Torah Shabbat Peh. But his father, the Rambam says, his father Yosef, Rabbi Akiva was Rabbi Akiva but Yosef, his father Yosef was a Ger Tzedek. Ger Tzedek. And this Ger Tzedek brought such a great blessing to the Jewish people. What's most unusual about Rabbi Akiva is the fact that he also presided over one of the most tragic defeats in Jewish history. He was the one who told the Jewish people about Bar Kokhba, this man is Malka Mashiach, this man is King Mashiach. And we know what happened. There was a 2.5-3 year period during which the Romans were vanquished in Eretz Yisrael. Bar Kokhba reestablished the Jewish kingdom here in Yerushalayim. There were the coins of Bar Kokhba that were minted, and then Rome regrouped and crushed it. Hundreds of thousands of Jews were slaughtered. And there's not a hint anywhere, not a hint in all of our writings of anybody pointing a finger of accusation at Rabbi Akiva. Look what Rabbi Akiva did to us. That's very unusual. We're a very critical people. We criticize people that shouldn't be criticized. And we're critical people. What can you do? I was going to say all Jews, but you know, that's still difficult. I haven't reached that madrega. You have to work a whole lifetime until you love all Jews. There's some of them I don't love, okay? Alright. Some of them I don't love. I shouldn't have admitted that. All right, I can't help it. But no, but I'm working on myself.
Rabbi, they should be working on themselves.
That's also true. Still work on themselves. Rabbi Akiva was never singled out for any kind of criticism. Klal Yisrael understood instinctively and intuitively that he had the best interests of the Jewish people in mind. It also may very well be that the heel of Rome was so intolerable that there had to be an explosion of rebellion. It couldn't have been otherwise. It had to be. I don't want to use, well, I'll use Rabbi Akiva took a great risk, but he took the great risk when there was no choice. When you take a risk, when other choices are available, the risk is a gamble. Rabbi Akiva didn't gamble with Klal Yisrael. Rabbi Akiva took a risk that he was forced into, which there was no choice. There was no ability to live under Rome. Klal Yisrael could not live under Rome. And therefore, it was understood that whatever he did was done. If it ultimately ended in absolute disaster and failure, so listen, this was Ritzon Hashem, that's all. But nobody held it against Rabbi Akiva. Alright, we're going to get this is just the beginning. Let's take a look at Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva, Omer. Maybe take a look first in the English sheet, after we've learned the mission of the English sheet, then we'll look. Yeah. Rabbi Akiva, Omer. Schok, the Kalut Rosh. Margilin et ha'odom le'erva. Schok means, you know, schok is more than joking around. There's a light. Mockery is a good word. They use the word mockery. But it's more than mockery, you know. Schok and kalus rosh are the definitions of people who are not serious. Not serious. And schok and kalus, lightheadedness, like everything goes. Let everything hang out. There's nothing, no restraints. Schok and kalus rosh. Margilin et adam le'erva. They accustom a person to immorality. The person who isn't serious, the person who's lightheaded, anything goes, everything's okay. No restrictions. And that's of course that's something that simply leads ultimately to immorality. Everything's a joke. And nothing is really serious. Masoret, Siyog LaTorah. Masoret is, and this of course takes us immediately back to the first Mishnah in Pirkei Avot. What's the first Mishnah? Moshe Kibel Torah B'Sinai, Moshe received Torah Sinai. U'Misorot LiYehoshua, and he transmitted it to Yehoshua. And Yehoshua to this kingdom, the Masorah is that which is passed on from one generation to the next. The Masorah in terms of Torah, when we talk about Masorah, what we mean is the oral law, the Torah Shebaal Peh. Torah Shebaal Peh, the written Torah would never have been understood without Torah Shebaal Peh. Torah Shebaal Peh is that which makes sense and makes intelligent to us all of Torah Shebichtav. There is so much in Torah Shebichtav that simply would not be understood if we would not have the words of the Torah Shebaal Peh, which incidentally was given simultaneously with Torah Shebichtav at Sinai. When we say Moshe Kibel Torah Mi Sinai, it means not only Torah Shebichtav, the written Torah, it means also the oral law. I mean, Moshe Rabbeinu comes down from the mountain and he tells them, you have to wear tefillin. That's all. What's this tefillin, Moshe? I mean, he had to explain all the intricacies. You have to shecht an animal before you can eat it. That's what it says, only one word in all of Torah. In all of Torah it says just, v'zovachta, and you shall slaughter. What does it mean? I mean, we have so many halachas on Shechita. Obviously, the Torah Shebichtav was the outline. And everything else was given to Moshe orally, and he proceeded to transmit it to the Jewish people orally. That masoret is the siyag. Now, a siyag over here, they translated it as a protective fence. And by the way, that also takes us back to the first Mishnah. In that first Mishnah, it said, Moshe kibei el Torah misinai masoret Yeshua, Yeshua to the elders to the prophets to the Anshei Knesset HaGadol, the men of the Great Assembly. They said three things. What are the three things that were said by the men of the Great Assembly? Having the tunim babin, be careful in passing judgment. Ha'amidu talmidim harbei, establish many students. Basu siyog la'Torah, you have to make a fence around the Torah. Torah needs a protective fence around it. Certainly when we're talking about a street, a society, a culture that is absolutely in conflict with Torah, then of course it seems this country has already learned, or they think they've learned, that you need a big fence in order to protect us. You understand? Big fences in order to protect us. Well, if we need big fences hundreds of kilometers long, you understand that nicht werden ersetzen bred in ganzen Eise, right? Understand? Okay. Torah needs a fence around it. Society all around us is absolutely inimical to Torah. It's just so asu siyag la Torah, the Anshei Knesset HaGadolah. The Anshei Knesset HaGadolah had learned, is the famous Meshech Chachma. Now, I think every Meshech Chachma is famous, or Meir Simcha, maybe it's not that famous. He says that when Jews came back from the Babylonian exile, they took a look at themselves, and they saw that in 70 years, they had the inroads of assimilation into the dominant culture was so strong and so powerful that they had to put up fences. As the Chacham describes, they came back from the from Babel, and we know already how many came back. 42,000 came back. Millions remained in Babel. 42,000 came back. They couldn't speak Hebrew. They spoke Aramaic. There were those who had already begun the process of intermarrying. I mean, they understood that there had to be fences that had to be made in order to protect Torah. Okay, I came back last week from Chutzlitz. You know I was away. You know, okay. So I'll tell you, I had this experience. I came to the airport for the flight back to Eretz Yisrael, and first time, and it never happened to me before. I always come early to Michigan. I always come early. I want to check in, take it easy. I come. There are about 400 people lined up all along the airport in New York. It's unbelievable. About 400 kids coming on a birthright. So here is this old guy, me, standing behind. So I finally decided to pull an Israeli thing. I see the rabbi of the airport comes walking by, Rabbi Rachman. Oh, hello, Rabbi, go, how are you? I go, listen, Rabbi Rachman, do me a favor. I'm pulling rank. I'm not going to stand here for 2 hours behind these 400 noisy kids. Take me to the front of the line. So he says, follow me. And he takes me over to Mamash. All those kids, I left them all behind. They took me through a little Derech Eretz, you understand, over there. And I got through. So I ended up speaking with two 19-year-old girls, and I got two pictures. Couldn't believe it. Here's this this girl on the plane, she was looking for Tulus HaDerech. And then she has something open that's a tillin to some chapter in Tillin, and she asks me, is this Tulus HaDerech? I said, no. Then I looked through it, this sefer that she had, and toward the end there was Tulus HaDerech, and the page had been bent over. So I said, no, here, somebody most probably, you know,
sure,
marked it all for you. So after she finishes, I ask her, who marked this off for you? So I hear the following story. Parents are Yordim. Live someplace there in America. Someplace in America. No Yiddishkeit in the house at all. Nothing. She knows nothing. How does she know about Tulus HaDerech?
Yeah.
Something happened. She's not even sure herself, but she has an older brother, and one day this older brother comes walking into the house and says he's going to a Jewish high school. Right? He started off in this Jewish high school. I don't want to say the name because that, you know, that will already get you closer to the source. From that Jewish high school he went to Shalavim. From Shalavim he went to Mir. From Mir he finished Yeshiva University, and he's now learning in Ner Yisrael. And here is this girl that knows so little, and she says, oh, the biggest shock when he came home one Shabbos with a black hat. The brother had told her, say Tulus HaDerech. So of course I spent time with her telling, there's a great deal you can learn from your brother. Alright? This is picture one. Yorei, American jewelry, nothing in the house, somehow or other. A brother has become a... And she says he's a great Talmud Chacham. Amul. She knows nothing, but that much she knows. Sitting next to her is another girl. And so I start talking with her, and the two of them have become friends. I don't remember what question I asked. But she says, my father isn't Jewish. Right? So I said, but you know, your mother is Jewish? Yeah. She says, you're Jewish. Yeah, but my brother is a Lutheran. My father is a Presbyterian. And I'm listening to all of this and saying, she knows nothing. So I told one girl to make sure that she remains friends with the other girl. Maybe somebody will learn something from two pictures of what's absolutely common. And she didn't say it like there's something unusual or exceptional about the fact that her father is not Jewish. She must have a lot of friends whose fathers are not Jewish, whose mothers are not Jewish. So ladies and gentlemen, 20 years ago we didn't know this in America. 20 years ago we didn't know this in America. That's what Anshei Knesset HaGedolah meant. Asuf Siyog LaTorah. What do you think Anshei Knesset HaGedolah did? They saw after the first experience, after 480 years the Jews had been living from the time of Yeshua, but 800, what am I talking about? 800, over 800 years the Jews had been living during the period of the first Beit HaMikdash, from the time of Yeshua until the destruction of the temple. They had been living in Eretz Yisrael. They had not come in contact with any other peoples. 70 years in Babel, and the fact is that the process had already started 30, 40 years into that period of time. The Horban that had already begun. There were kids who had fathers that were not Jewish, or mothers that were not Jewish. So they said, you have to make a siyog. Rabbi Akiva says over here, Masoret siyog LaTorah. Masoret, the fence, the protection, the strengthening of Torah is the Torah Sheba'al Peh. Torah requires strengthening. Torah requires strengthening, especially as we say, when the whole atmosphere the atmosphere in the street and the world around us is one that is in conflict with everything that Torah is all about. Rabbi Akiva is going to prepare us for some of the most unusual statements that are made over here in Pirkei Avos. Anyway, this has just been our first step into Pirkei Avos. We have to share a lot of things coming up in the weeks to come.
Yeah.